Gold Podcast, covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roy Byrne.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Daily Gold Podcast. With me today is an old friend who I reconnected with about a year ago. He's Dave Skirica, noted Miami Vice fan. He has a YouTube channel, a new YouTube channel called Stock Chart of the Day. We're going to talk about that. Dave, I mean, we've known each other for almost 15 years, really. So it's great to do an interview with you again. I think it's been over a decade since the last one we did. How are you doing? And thanks so much for coming on today.
Well, I think this is the first one I've ever done. We did when I used to live in Nassau. So for people that don't know me, I moved to the Bahamas in 2005. And I lived in Nassau for like 6 years. And then I bought a house in Eleuthera, which is an island about 50 miles to the east of Nassau. It's kind of famous that Lenny Kravitz, like Lenny Kravitz was like 5 minutes from my house. So that's, you know, I was going to say something about this in a second. But anyhow, I moved there. And this is the first time, you know, and that was 2011 I moved here. I moved into my house in January 2012. Actually, this is the 12th anniversary. I think it's the first time since I moved to my new place. And actually, I've paid off the house. So it has been a long time since we talked. I was going to say, back then, you had long hair and I had short hair. Now I have long hair and you have short hair. We have all these. I live in a surfer's beach. So there's always hippies around me. So I kind of like, you know what they say, when in Rome. So I just kind of like, I think the one barber or, you know, hairdresser I use is, she's like a 40-minute drive from my house, which is a pain in the butt. So I just would go less and less. And all of a sudden my hair was long and I'm a big NXS fan too. And I was like, hey, I thought I was going to get a big Afro. I'm Jewish, right? So I was going to get the big Jufro, I guess they call it. And then it kind of grew up, like it was kind of wavy and like this kind of curly and long. I was like, yeah, it looks pretty cool. Kind of looked like Michael Hutchins. A lot of 80s terminology we're using today. But anyhow, yeah, so then I just grew it long. And yeah, like, so yeah, just to get into Stock Chart of the Day before we start talking about gold, for years, I've kind of thought, I don't know, for me personally, I was getting tired of writing the print letter. Everything's moving toward these live streams and videos. And I think I'm a pretty good talker. So I decided, like, you know what I'm going to do instead of the newsletter is just kind of these daily updates on different markets, different stocks. So hence Stock Chart of the Day. I've sponsored companies for the free videos. I have a paid service via either a lifetime subscription or a Patreon membership, which is only, you know, $7 a month. And I just kind of started building it that way. So the last 6 or 7 months I've been building the content of Stock Chart of the Day. Like if you go, youtube.com/ScottDay. So Scott Day is pretty easy to remember. You'll see all the videos there and you can just see if you like them or not. And then in my pay service, I talk more about maybe private placements I'm doing or stocks that I own or stuff that I'm trading. And the free one is really more just like talking about large cap stocks, macroeconomics, gold, silver. Like I just did one on gold. Your people would probably be interested in. And we do interviews with some of the sponsor companies. Now it's a little different in sponsors too, that most of the companies are companies I invest in. And then I say, hey, you want to be a sponsor company? Cause we can also help, you know, market and kind of like get an awareness campaign out there at the same time. So it's not like companies are pitching me. It's usually the other way around. It's stuff I like. And then I'm like, hey, come aboard. So anyhow, that's basically it. Addicted to Profits is still around, but it's going to be more of a consulting business for companies, you know, and also because I live in the Bahamas, I'm going to start a business on like, if people want to become expats, and tax refugees and move offshore, of course, I'll be kind of, you know, a specialist in the Bahamas because I live here. But I'll get maybe contacts all over the world, how to move to certain places. And that's what Addicted to Profits will come in. I have to kind of keep it around because you won't see it because it's on the other side of my house. And we're doing this in the day. But I have a neon Addicted to Profits light that I spent like $1,000 on. So I'm like, I have to keep it going just for this damn light, you know?
Yeah.
The reason me and Jordan became good friends is that we're both huge football fans. I'm a Raiders fan. And he's a UW fan, Washington fan. So, and we kind of, you know, I'm only 6 years older than him. So we kind of grew up at the same time. And we would like talk about old 80s and 90s football and stuff like that. So, you know.
If we start talking about football, I mean, this podcast would go on all day. I mean, we just, we could not stop. But, you know, Dave, one thing I want to say, and what I love about your work is, you know, even though you kind of grew up in, I mean, of course, you grew up in Canada and the junior markets, you're not this perma-bear doomster where, you know, everything's going to shit and, you know, you need to invest in only junior mining stocks. I mean, you look at all markets, like you have a global macro view. And so when you come to a bullish position on gold and silver and precious metals, I mean, it's almost relative to everything else. I mean, you're looking at many things at the same time. You're investing in other sectors. And so I really like and appreciate that with your work.
One of my best trades was, and I remember we talked about at the time, was in 2009, I bought Tata Motors, the Indian car maker. They don't even trade, by the way, anymore in NYSE. It only trades in India now, and they own Jaguar and Land Rover. And it collapsed from $30 to $350 during the financial crisis. I think it actually went as low as $3. I bought it around $350 and went back to $30. I think I sold it like around $20 or something like that. That was one of my best trades. I bought HL Toy. That was Hellenic Telecom in the letter. Greece collapsed. I think our average price was $140, and I think it went to 50 cents, and it eventually went back to $7-$8. So yeah, I kind of like living in the Bahamas and John Templeton lived here. I try to do a lot what Templeton does and the whole maximum pessimism thing. Like actually in my pay version of Stock Chart of the Day, we have kind of these tech turnaround plays that are like, you know, stocks that, you know, during COVID and all these tech things went crazy. One's a gaming company. The other one's an online real retailer. Another one's an energy company. So these are all stocks that are down like 90-95%. Actually, another one's an online streaming company. And, you know, I'm kind of, you know, positioning these thinking that, especially if I think after the Fed cuts rates this year, that the second phase of this kind of bull market will be not just the Magnificent Seven, but these smaller cap kind of companies participating.
Okay, yeah. So let's talk about your, I mean, let's talk about the stock market and kind of your bigger macro market view, because it's something I've been wondering. And I mean, there's so few people who look at this the way that you do. I mean, this secular bull market in U.S. stocks, I mean, you listen to some people and they're like, yeah, this thing's going to go on for another 7 years. I mean, what's your view on that? I mean, is there any historical comparison? I mean, how much longer can this thing really go on for?
Well, in 2022, I was super bearish, like really bearish, like because they were raising, like when, especially that spring of 2022, I was like, look, inflation's getting to 8% and rates are still zero, you know, right when the Russian invasion started. And that's when commodities spiked too. And I'm like, they're going to have to raise rates to 3-5%, you know, and because remember, if you remember, hawkish people back then were talking going back to 2%, like 2018. And I was like, no, they're going to have to be way more, you know, hawkish than people think, because we have now the highest inflation since the 1970s. And what happened was we had about a 9-month, 8-10-month bear market, you know, from January to October. The S&P, I think, fell around 20-25%. And I took a lot of bearish bets off late that year and early in 2023, because the longer the rally occurred, I was like, look, this looks like this is a cyclical bull market, even if it's just kind of being driven by these big tech stocks. And I really don't want to be shorted. Like, and I was like, I made money in NVDS and Tesla Q, you know, these ETFs that you can short the individual stocks. And I was like, I don't want to get in front of that freight train. Being a value investor, it was tough for me to say go long something like NVIDIA. I wish I had, but you know, but I was just kind of like, I want to get out of the way here. And then by the middle of this year, I was like, look, the rate hikes are basically done and we're going to go a rate cut cycle. So I think the analogy is 1966, very similar bear market, 9-10 months. Market went down 20-25%, then rallied into about the election of, you know, fourth quarter of 68. than there. People always remember 73, 74, but they don't remember 68, 70 was a bad bear market. The market lost 36%. So I think that's kind of what we're going to see. And I think we talked off air. You made an excellent point that in 1965, interest rates really started to move higher, just like we did in 2022. So I think that, you know, we're kind of the end of the secular bull market in bonds. Bond bull markets are extremely long, 30, 40 years. And this one was 40 years. And I think that that has ended. And that was a real tailwind, you know, for stocks. Companies could borrow cheap, buy back stock, all of that sort of thing. And I think, you know, we'll get whatever the Fed funds rate back down to 3% or whatever it might be, 2.5%. And then we'll start going higher again. Probably in 2025, 2026. See, they're in a bit of a conundrum right now. Now everything looks great. Market near all-time highs. You know, Meta and Amazon just had amazing earnings. So everything looks good on the surface. But the problem they're having is there's a lot of problems in the regional banks. And those regional banks really need lower rates. And they don't want, even though the regional banks aren't like 2008, they still don't want like another SNL. Type crisis happening. So I don't think they're saying that in like when they talk about what rates are going to go. But I think one reason they're going to start cutting rates in May is because that will really help out these regional banks and, you know, maybe delay like another crisis for a while. But I think this is a normal rate cut cycle, like the 60s, 70s, like 95, like 2019, where they kind of cut rates. You know, they're going to cut rates and probably the stock market does pretty well. Now, it's not cheap. You know, market cap to GDP is getting back to those near all-time highs. Like you said, people talking about, you know, 7-10 years. Again, I think this is more like 66 to 68. Probably within the next 12 to 18 months, the market will top out. I'm not going to give, you know, it'll probably be north of 5,000 in the S&P. We're almost right there right now. But but here's the thing where I think is great is gold investors. We can segue into this. I've done a video. It's not the last gold video I did, but if some of your people want to DM me, it's Twitter is just Twitter/David Skorica, Addicted to Profits at hotmail.com is my email. And essentially, like if someone wants to contact me, I'll find the link to my video I did on gold stocks and gold during rate cut cycles. And you know this, the first 12 to 18 months of a rate cut cycle, the best performing sector, period, is gold and precious metal stocks historically, right? It's, you know, you look at 2009 when they started doing QE, or 2019 or 2020 when they cut rates to zero after the COVID crash, or, 2001 to 2003. Every single instance, gold and gold stocks do excellent. So they're still languishing now. People are still worried. Okay, the people threw a tantrum on Wednesday in the Fed meeting that they're not going to cut in March. But I think once you get in to that scenario where they cut rates, the gold and gold stocks will really move. And if you go look at past, I don't know if you can put the chart up because we talked about screen sharing, just get a chart of gold, I don't know, since 2000. And if you go look at, there's been three, in my opinion, significant areas of resistance that gold has had since then. In 2003, it was 425, which represented resistance from the mid 90s. In 2008, 2009, it was 1,000. Gold went to 1,000 and sold off about, you know, from it a few times. And then from 2016 to 2019, it was 1,400. And then right now, since 2020, it's been 2,100. And all those other three cases I said, gold went up between 50 to 140% above its previous high. So above, you know, 425 to that 1,000. Then when it broke 1,000, it went to 1,900. Then when it broke 1,400, it went to a 2,100. So I think from that, we could probably see a gold price of roughly 3,000 to 4,000 on this next move. So that's what I kind of believe.
But Dave, even on the day we're speaking, I mean, there was a strong jobs report. I mean, who knows what one month you get, oh, this is a bad jobs report. They're revising this. I mean, but I mean, you know this. What really matters is not the news, it's the market's reaction. Gold's not even down 1%. It's down, you know, $19. It's like on this news, you would think it would be down like $35.
Yeah, and I think, again, you look at the market when it sold off on Wednesday when the Fed, I guess, acted more hawkish. It's kind of like it wasn't like down like 500-600 points. It basically, again, what's going on with the market, if you go look at the Fed fund futures, it's just basically a month ago, they were pricing in 150 basis points of cuts. Now they're pricing to the end of the year. Now they're pricing in 125. It's basically that the rate cut in March got taken off the table. That's all that's happened. So, and actually the other analogy I'm using is, and I did this in my recent gold video. You'll see this is the one I think I did on Wednesday. Anyhow, I said that this kind of reminds me of 2003 in terms of the price action where gold spiked earlier in the year. You know, it spiked in January 2003. It sold off that resistance, that 425. And then in April, it began to move higher. Actually, that's when the whole stock market came out of the three-year bear market from 2000s. And everything kind of got reinflated. And that's kind of what I see now. That gold might still not do anything till March or April. So that's another, you know, we're in February. That's only a month or two at this point. And then at some point when it becomes obvious, okay, the Fed is going to do these incremental rate cuts, I think it will really, really move and break that 2100. And like you said, like, you know, and remember, it's had a move up higher too, like recently, like in the fall, gold bottomed around 1800. So, you know, it's only down like 1%, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's not like that big of a deal right now, you know, on this. Yeah. And like, I still think the economy, and one reason they'll cut rates, you're going to see the economy weaken. You know, you're going to see the economy go to, you know, like you're going to see the jobs. You know, there's been a lot of layoffs reported, especially in the tech sector recently. So I think that's going to filter through the system at some point, you know. And like, let's say even if we don't see job losses, like what are these jobs being created? Probably someone who had a really good paying job at a big tech company making hundreds of thousands a year. Now they're getting a new job that probably pays a quarter or half of what they were making at that tech company. And that means, you know, that means a weakening economy too, because that individuals are going to have less disposable income, you know? So.
So is your macro view that we're not going to see a recession and downturn until 25? You think that's more likely?
I think that's more likely, but I do think if we do see a recession, it's going to be a shallow recession. And the 25, 26, I am not an economist. You can never predict these things exactly, but whatever. Later on this decade is going to be the more severe recession. The issue you have, and this is where I will sound like a gold doom and gloomer, is the national debt and debts are so out of control now that if we get 8% interest rates on the 10-year bond, we're effed, you know, like it's over for the government at that point. That is the difference between now and the 60s and 70s, that the sovereign debt right now, and obviously that rates went to 5%. This ain't Japan. We ain't seen zero rates for 20 or 30 years, right? So I think at some point we're going to see some issues on the sovereign. And, you know, remember, all the baby boomers are retiring in the next 10 years. They're going to be, you know, they're going to be using Social Security. They're going to be using Medicaid and using Medicare. And so those expenditures are going nowhere but up. So the government's going to be in a real bind going forward. And are they going to default? No, they're probably just going to print their way out of it. And actually, and you know this too, just to, you know, get into inflation cycles, I think we're in the lull of the inflation cycle. We went to 8. We're at around 3. We'll bottom, you know, probably between 2 and 3. That's the government numbers. We all know the under report, but still, let's just use the government numbers. And then we'll probably see another spike towards the double digits again later on this decade.
And that's when you know, you could get the repeat of 74, I think is what you're saying. Because Dave, you know, yeah. I see, and not to criticize other people, but just like the 2008 happened, and so many people are saying, we're going to have it's like 2009 and 2010, and people are saying, we're going to have another 2008. You know that markets don't work that way. You don't get like a perfect copy 5 or 10 years after the fact. Like, I mean, you can have similarities, yeah, exactly. But it's all like, I just, like, you know, maybe I'm wrong. I just don't see any repeat of 2008 in the next 2, 3, or 4 years. I mean, if there's any whiff of deflation, like the policymakers will not let that happen. I mean, their fiscal is now the driver. This isn't 2008 where people didn't like fiscal stimulus. Fiscal stimulus is the driver right now. It doesn't matter which party's in power. If the economy gets weak, they're going to spend tons of money. I don't know. I'm not telling.
The problem is we get a sovereign debt crisis because then they can't do that. So I don't know. I think that is going to happen at some point. I just don't know. I don't think we're there yet, but I think it's more like the later part of this decade. Because remember, most of the bond is a short that the government sells is short term orientated. And I think it's another reason the Fed is cutting. They don't talk about this kind of stuff, but they're like, we can't be selling bonds at 5%. Because if that, we're still doing that in 2030, the interest on the national debt, it's already gone over the trillion for the first time ever. It's going to be $3 trillion, you know? So, but I do think Bill Fleckenstein has talked about this. At some point, he says the bond market takes the printing press and the government spending press away because they can't do it anymore. But I agree with you. In the short term, they're still going to do that. And also, let's face it, I think there'll still be a bid in the bond. You know what I'm saying? Like if we get in a recession, I still think in the next few years, you'll still see like the yields come down. People go to the flight to safety. So I still think, and like, I'm just looking at the charts again, the long-term secular bear market. I just think this is near the end of the cyclical move where we went from basically 0 to 5% and we'll go down to whatever, 3%. And then usually you don't go straight back up. You know, you'll sit around there for a while and that sort of thing. So, and like I said, it's like inflation. I just don't think that's for a couple of years. And like you said, nothing repeats itself. Like I see the reason I got hammered in 2008 was I was like all in gold and precious metals and juniors. I was like, oh, in 01, 02, I did great in those, you know, even while the NASDAQ imploded. And then all of a sudden they got, hammered worse than anything in September, October of 2008, right? So luckily they came back kind of quicker than anything. But it was like, I learned my lesson from like, okay, you can't just say the previous thing is what's going to happen again. And I think that's actually goes for the gold and precious metals market. That if we see the next bear market, you know, I think it's going to be more similar to one of the 70s where gold and precious metals are actually rallying while the market kind of goes down, you know, especially if it's a longer term bear market. Like, okay, if it's like 2020 during COVID or like September, October, 2008, everything kind of crashes together. Gold stocks crash in 1987 too, but yeah, that's kind of what I think, you know. So you hate to be like too positive, but with the gold and precious metal stocks, you know, the CDNX is 80% off its all time high. They're depressed and no one wants them. I know. Look at the sector and I'm like, why am I doing this? That's usually the bottom, right? So I positioned myself, like I got this, and I talked to off air, I got this energy storage deal that's ripping right now. And then I have a bunch of gold and precious metal deals pre-IPO and on the market I've done. And I think that, you know, if we move higher, there's another thing about 2003 that I mentioned, which I think this is similar to, that second half of 2003, the juniors were like on fire. So I'm hoping that happens again, because it's been, other than, you know, a little 6 to 12 month 2020-2021, it's been pretty much garbage, you know, in the last few years for the junior stocks.
Yeah, and I want to finish just talking about maximum pessimism and how to identify that, because I did a video on gold stocks a week or two ago, and just all the comments were, they were pretty amusing. I mean, people are pretty upset. You know, this sector's a piece of shit. Why would anybody invest in these? You know, they're taking it, you know, miners are doing squat. And some guy said, yeah, they're actually squatting and taking a dump right now. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to get graphic with people, but it's like when the comments, when they're like, they border on just amusing territory and people are so angry. I mean, you can't blame them for being angry. But to me, that just screams like we're around that maximum pessimism point for miners. I mean, am I wrong? How do you see it? What is there anything you can look at to identify that you're in maximum pessimism.
I use stock charts. I don't know what you use, right? But I use stockcharts.com. And for whatever reason, I never looked at the CDNX. Maybe because I'm so disgusted right now, you know? But then I actually looked at like the venture, right? And I'm like, what the hell has this thing been doing? You know, and then I got like, you know, a 20-year chart. And I was like, I forgot that it peaked. You know, usually I just kind of look at my own juniors, right? I'm like, I forgot that this thing peaked at 3,000 back in 07. And it's like 500-600. It's back where it was during the 2015 bottom, you know, when you know, gold was 1,100. And, you know, and other than the little kind of crash reverse V bottom it had in 2020, it's basically at the lows it's been in the last, you know, it's lower was in the early 2000s when gold was 300, you know, like, you know, it just shows you how depressed it is. But if you look at the chart again, go back to 2003, and I'm telling you, put up a 24-year chart of the CDNX going back to 2000, there's a similar kind of base to what we've seen in the last, you know, few years. You know, from about 2003, and then you'll see that second half of 03, it just broke out, and it, back then the bottom was 800, and it went to 3,000, so it went up 4x. You know, so like, you know, if it goes back to the old highs, you're talking 6x, and you know, if you're in the right deals, they'll go up 20 or 30 times, right? So like, I think right now, yeah, when I look at this, it does look like it's basing and bottoming. And look, when you're looking at maximum pessimism, Like, you know, 2015, 2016 was good for Russia. You can't trade Russian stocks anymore. Like I said, 2012 was Greece. 2016 was also good for base metals. And I think now it's like you look at the stock market kind of rebounding, other than some individual stocks that have maybe gotten beaten up. It's the gold juniors, you know, like crypto, Bitcoin's back at 40,000. So a lot of the crypto stuff isn't, you know, it was maybe a year ago, but it's not cheap anymore. So it's really the gold juniors are where it is, you know, right now. And if you have a little basket, look at gold juniors are your gambling money. They're your Vegas money, right? They're not something you put a lot of your portfolio in, but you've got some 5-10% you can fool around with, and you can buy some quality gold juniors. You're probably going to do very well. And yeah. And then when I make all, like I make, you know, I did it in 2020, 2021. I did it in, you know, how I bought my house here that I'm living. Was I had a deal called Tinka Resources, and I bought a 10-cent financing with a 15-cent warrant, and the stock went up 5-6x. And when I sold a bit of my stock at 50-60 cents, and I rotated it into the warrant, boom, I made enough money. I remember yelling at my brokers. Brokers never want you to take money out of the account. I'm like, you send me that damn money, you know, and I'm putting that as a down payment on my house. So like, yeah, when you have the good markets, then you're kind of like, oh yeah, this is, you got to make sure you don't get greedy though. Cause you're like, oh yeah, this is what it's like to make money in these juniors, and they can go up 10 or 20 times in 6 months. You're not going to get that in a lot of other sectors, but yeah, you have to, you know, you have these long periods of right now where it's just like that guy said, taking a dump, and you know, it's just like, have you ever seen the movie Gold with Matthew McConaughey about the Briex thing?
Oh, I have not.
You got to see it, because the beginning of the movie, what happens is his dad owns a huge, you know, mining company, and it goes to crap. I think they make the movie because they're not making it exactly like Briex. First of all, they're living in Reno, not Calgary. And second of all, they make it kind of take place during the early 80s when that whole bust in commodities happened from like 80 to 82. And he's sitting down depressed, and, you know, the stock's like, so it was like, you know, this NYC listed stock, now it's some 2-cent penny stock. And then when they raise some money for the deal, they're all in a bar drunk on the phones calling people, you know, for the private placement. So it's totally, to me, that's junior mining in a nutshell. Just that depression you get when everything's down, and you know, and you're, and not only that, like, you know, because you write, your subscriptions are down, your portfolio is down, you know, you own a bunch of 5-cent stuff you think is garbage. That's kind of, and when you feel that way, that's the bottom. That's the ironic thing, you know?
Yeah. Okay, Dave, I know you got to run here in a couple minutes. So any final words, and also tell our viewers, how to follow you on Twitter and your YouTube channel and website.
Yeah. Twitter is just my name, twitter.com/DavidSkarica. I still haven't moved everything to stockchartoftheday.com. So you either go to the YouTube page, which is Scott Day, which is Stock Chart of the Day, you know, the short form. And then I still have addictedtoprofits.net, and I post the videos there as well. And yeah, if you go on Stock Chart, if you go to, again, my YouTube channel, I've got a link there to my Patreon, which is $7 a month, if you're kind of interested in maybe some of the things I do. And actually, till the Super Bowl, I'm calling it my Super Sunday special, I'm having a discounted, I do, for people who are really interested in private placements and these deals, I have a lifetime subscription. You have to be an accredited investor. But if you're interested, lifetime subscription is $1,000, and it's usually 2,000. And I'm gonna, till the Super Bowl, I'm gonna keep that that deal on. Not that I care about the Super Bowl, because I don't really like the Niners. I don't care about them that much, but I absolutely detest and hate the Chiefs. So it's not really much of a Super Bowl for me, you know. And that was before Taylor Swift. I detested them.
Yeah, I wasn't going to bring up the Super Bowl, because then we'd add another 15 minutes to this video.
But yeah, well, I don't care about it really. So,
Dave, thanks so much for coming on. You know, we'll have to do this again more actively once we get gold breaking out, we get a bull market, some money flowing in these juniors.
And maybe in August or September, we'll do a football preview podcast just for fun.
That would be great. All right. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for tuning into the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.